Hello everybody and welcome to episode 284 of the 9 Years Podcast. I am Nick Draper. I am joined as always by the face of the BBC Sport website, Mr. Stuart Deakins. We are recording this, starting to record this about 7:30 on Tuesday evening. And so we don't yet know our current fate with both Gillingham and Morecambe playing away from home this evening, or Tuesday evening, I should say. By the time you're listening to this, maybe we have dropped into the bottom four. We shall see. But Stu, the big fixture coming up this evening is the big, not a derby between Plymouth and Portsmouth. I'm sure their fans are well up for derby evening down on the south coast.
I saw this. Yeah, do you know what? I knew you were going to mention it as well. The Dockyard Derby, as we call it.
As you call it.
It's what they call it, the Dockyard Derby. It's along the coast, isn't it? So it's an interesting game, to be fair. Pompey in decent form. Plymouth, obviously, obviously going towards the playoffs and stuff like that. So, some big games. But then, let's be fair, we're at a part of the season now where games are all, all got sunk on it, haven't they? There's very few dead rubbers now. So.
Indeed. I'm not going to make a bad joke about dead rubbers. I'm going to move straight on. What fun did we have? Can we just take a moment before we get into all Wimbledon stuff we've got loads to get into this week? Can we just take a moment to have a laugh at Chelsea, please? Because they are an absolute shambles and a joke of a football club. I have hated Chelsea all my life. All my life, as I'm sure you have too as well, Stu. Exacerbated post-2003. And now I just think, well, they've got nowhere to go now because these fans have started moaning. But you know what? You want to jump on a bandwagon 20 years ago? You knew what was going to happen. And chickens have come home to roost, I feel.
Yeah. I think they need to understand that they're not the one calling the shots at the moment, which they seem to still think they are. So, they come out of this stupid thing about playing behind closed doors for the Middlesbrough and having to take a coach journey. That's where you just sometimes, I can imagine there's probably people in our team probably going, what are you on about? We did Plymouth midweek away and start. I think we did Sunderland midweek as well. Flying to games, crikey, that's a luxury. And they don't have the money to do that. But it's fun, isn't it? It's fun until they get another owner, or if they get another owner. Not that I'd wish that on them at all.
Not at all. But it was great for me to have a little bit of a poke at them on Twitter and at the same time have a little poke at Milton Keynes and for the official Milton Keynes Twitter to retweet us thinking that they were the ones being funny. Well, that's blown up in their faces once again. But I had great fun winding up their fans, in inverted commas, because they don't have many.
And that starts, doesn't it, as well, because we've got those. Beginning of April, wasn't it, I believe?
April the 9th, as their fans keep messaging us on Twitter to say,
Do you know what? I don't think I'm looking forward to many games, to be fair. We're in that sort of thing, aren't we? But taking away, as I said to you before, taking away the emotional side of it, they're a very decent team. I know you can see it. You won't be able to see this because it's obviously not a visual thing, but Mark's just looking at me as if I've just told him that the world isn't round. Taking emotion out, which I try to sometimes, they are a very good footballing team, but putting emotion back in, we've got to kick them all night.
You referenced there, Mark, so it's a good opportunity to introduce our guest on the show this week. We are joined by Mark Engelbretson. Mark, thank you very much for taking the time to join us on the podcast this week.
That's fine, thank you very much indeed. Apologies if I'm not coming across sounding too well tonight. I'm actually still a little bit full of COVID at the moment.
You're still going to sound better than Stu, don't worry. You'll be fine. Mark, you, before we get into what brought you onto the podcast this week, you stood for election for the Don's Trust board. Where are we now? About 6 months ago, I think, wasn't it, the election interview, election cycle? Just obviously, unfortunately, not on this occasion voted on, but what was your motivation, just so people know, what was your motivation for putting yourself forward to stand on the board?
My motivation for going forward for the board is I've been an AFC Wimbledon fan all my life. I'm now in my mid to late 40s, started to go and watch Wimbledon play when I was about 4 years old. And I sold programmes for the club, watched the club home and away, was there when we won the FA Cup. When we made that move north and we no longer had a club, I started to go and watch AFC Wimbledon play. Also, at the same time, I was a football referee and was watching us in the Combined Counties League. Thought I could do as good a job as the match officials there, to join the panel of match officials in the Combined Counties. And as AFC Wimbledon progressed, I actually progressed with them as a match official, right the way through to the conference. They then went on to the Football League. I just missed out. But I had quite a lot of enjoyment officiating them over the years. And I actually was a fourth official for a League Two game against Plymouth when the referee got injured down at King's Meadow. So that was
an but
I came back watching the club regularly as a season ticket holder. And I started to look and been contemplating about applying to go onto the Don's Trust board for a number of years. But the time was right for me, and I'd like to be able to bring some of my professionalism from my day job into the way that the Don's Trust board is running, and to look at it being run and running alongside AFC Wimbledon Limited as a proper business. Because at the moment, there's a lot of volunteer time that goes into it. And not to be too critical of some of the people on there, needs to be a lot more professionalism, and there are some very, very good people on there, but there's a lot of things I do look at and I get really frustrated at, because I don't think they're being done in a professional manner that befits a League One football club. And I want to try and bring out my own knowledge and expertise from sitting on boards of multi-billion pound pension schemes, and how they operate, into how you actually should run a proper trust board.
So where do you see the weaknesses at the moment? Is there any particular examples you've got, or do you think it's a general area that we're getting wrong, be it, I mean, the old chestnut communications, whatever it might be?
Everyone always puts things down to communications not being right. I don't think that they are strategically enough focused. They get too involved in the nitty-gritty. They want to be too operational, and sometimes they need to leave some of the operational stuff to the troops on the ground. And there are plenty of troops on the ground, whether it be fans, whether it be people that actually work for the club, etc. They just seem to want to be over absolutely everything, but don't necessarily have the right skill sets or expertise within the trust board to be able to do that, especially when you compare them to how other League One football clubs and also League Two football clubs are run, operated and managed at a top level. And ultimately, that's what the Don's Trust board is there for, is to oversee the successful running of the club.
Is this potentially, though, a bit of a chicken and egg thing? Are the members of Don's Trust board becoming more involved in the operational side of things because they have to, because we don't have the resources underneath them within the football club, within the AFC Wimbledon Limited or AFCW PLC? Is that why they've got involved that way?
In some respects, yes. And so I think they have to have a little bit of faith in the individuals that run the club. They also need to, if they're involved in the appointment process, they need to start appointing the right people into the roles. And we've tended to operate through the trust board and through the club. One, they take an awful long time. Secondly, I'm not always convinced that they've got the right level of experience to be selecting the right people for certain roles. And I'd be very interested to see what comes out of Joe Palmer deciding to leave the club and what we do about appointing a replacement for Joe. I mean, there's certainly lots of rumours going out there that we won't even be appointing a CEO, which for me, I find very surprising. But I'd be very interested to see how that works, and we need to be doing something in that respect pretty quickly. I don't think we should be hanging around, especially with the current situation on the playing field with the club. But we've also got to start getting somebody in and planning for next season, whether that's League One football or whether that's League Two football.
I mean, Stu, that's a point that you've made to me in the past, that is, have to start now. But Mark, I suppose what you're saying is there, and Stu, I don't know what your thoughts on this are. Is that a call for someone with a little bit more experience, football knowledge, football nous, in a sort of a higher up role within the club structure?
Do you know what? It depends what level you're looking at. I'm a fan of potentially the club employing a director of football to provide what we now call the coach role, Robbo's role. I would potentially have a director of football that's got some experience there. But I would bring somebody in to replace Joe Palmer as CEO, who has got experience either involved in the running of a Football League club or a top level sporting organisation. It doesn't necessarily have to be football. It can be from the world of rugby. It could be from the world of cricket. It could be from the world of tennis down the road at Wimbledon. But we've got to be able to bring the right person in to manage AFC Wimbledon Limited and to be able to take the club forward at an operational level.
I think it's the challenges as well is always down to financial, isn't it? In terms of what is it going to cost to replace Joe? We don't publish our salaries and stuff like that. I agree with the director of football. I definitely do. Because I think one of the things that we need to look at from this season is who takes ownership of recruitment, because let's not beat around the bush. Recruitment's not been good enough this year. In no way has it been good enough in terms of what we've... Especially from the loans we've got, and there's no disrespect to any of the loanies that come in, but they've all been making their league debuts. And that is really tough when you've got a young team already. But the director of football, I like the idea of it, but also how do we do it? Because a director of football will come in and will make the decisions. Because if something doesn't work, you've got to have someone, you've got to know where the issue is along the cob. You've got to know where the issue is. And at the moment, the person who's getting that heat is the head coach. But the head coach works with what he gets. So, you know, it's understanding what the roles are. A manager normally, so under Glyn, responsible for transfers, recruitment, and also managing the team. But Robbo, quite clearly, yes, he's one-fifth of the football committee, but we've done a very, I call it a Brentford light. It's an idea of that sort of side of it, but it's not easy to do and it needs money in it. But at the moment, I did say at the start of the season, if we didn't have a good season, who takes ownership for it? At the moment, it's very difficult to see that. So a director of football, I like the idea of, because it gives you ownership. But then equally, do we still need the football committee underneath it? Because we also need a database of players. Does that director of football come in with a database of players? There's so many things we need to do. That I like the idea of it, but I also worry financially, can we afford it? Which shouldn't be a reason, but you don't want to take your money out of your playing budget. So that's why I think money does always impact a lot of what we do.
Money's quite an important one. And this is something we see a lot of our fans at the moment complaining, blaming Robbo for this, blaming Robbo for that, which he's an easy target. But do you know what? We need to think about the way that we finance this club. And I've been around through thick and thin since the late 70s watching football involved in Wimbledon. And do you know what? Whilst the model of fans investing in the club is great, it is admirable. Do you know what? It can only take you so far. If our fans are saying, yes, do you know what? We want our team to push on to the championship. We want our team to be able to push on to the premiership. Do you know what? We're going to have to allow somebody or a group of individuals to come into the club that have got some money, but also to think very carefully then about the voting structure to get things done. And it's been very interesting. You referred to the Chelsea situation. I read an article in the Times last Saturday around the German model, and that could the Chelsea situation be a great opportunity for English clubs to once again look at the structure of club ownership, similar to Germany, where the fans still have that in respect casting vote on things that are done with a football club. But if our fans want us to progress, and I'm one that do want us to progress, then we need to seriously think about actually bringing in some additional funds to this club. If people want us to just kick around, occasionally pop up into League One, but are happy for us to be into League Two, and maybe even down in the national divisions again, then carry on doing what we're doing. But do you know what? Our club's better than that. I'm not being funny. There's no way Sam Haman's going to be popping out again to take the club over, or his devil spawned like child is suddenly going to come along and try and take over this club. Let's find somebody that's a good suitor, that can come in, understands the ethos of the club, understands the fans, and that can maybe bring some money with them for us all to go together forward in a happy way.
I mean, the fan-owned question has been, we've been asking it really since day one of AFC Wimbledon. I think even back on day one, the question was being asked, is this something that's going to last forever? Or is there going to come a point when we look to perhaps losing some control, whatever it might be? I think there's many parts to this conversation, that fan ownership. I think one is when we have these conversations, I mean, me personally, I'm in no desire to sell the club or not be fan owned. I would like to see how far we can go as a fan owned entity. And I don't know if we can put a judgment on that at current time. I still think, you know, we've got a few years ahead of us that are going to be hard because of the debt we've accrued, paying that one off. It's going to be difficult. But beyond that, if we can start getting back to a level where we can start to invest sustainably in the club with our own stadium now, with the facilities that offers us, with the opportunities to increase the size of the stadium and the revenue that comes from it, we could perhaps see how far we go. But I mean, at present time, the problem is every time we have this conversation, as you say there, Mark, people that are opposed to selling up or losing control immediately go for that Sam Haman, Derby County, Chesterfield type worst case scenario. And as you say, if you find someone sensible that knows the club and knows the area, whatever it is, it can be a huge success. And there are many examples of this. And Stu, take a drink, Luton Town is probably the prime example of that right now. So I do get slightly frustrated when people say immediately, if you think selling up the club means losing out to an Abramovich type or someone like that, because I think it does a disservice to the many, many fantastic football club owners that there are out there, privately owned. Accrington Stanley, I think, is a great example in our division right now. And also they prove similarly that they can actually do well without great finances, which also might be an argument in favour of keeping our model as it is. Stu, you're probably going to say that now what we're noticing is that the calls to sell up, the calls for investment are growing stronger and stronger, and they're coming at a time when we're not doing so well on the pitch. Does that not indicate that the chief issue, the chief concern for the majority of fans is simply what happens out on the pitch on a Saturday afternoon?
It always is. And I've said to you many times before, you know, when you're going along this journey and it's all going really well, you don't look at the background stuff. You don't notice it, because actually, why should you? Because the product you're seeing on the pitch means that everyone in the background is doing a great job, and they have. But then I always said to you that the moment we start struggling, really struggling, is when you then get the fans going, well, where's the money? Where's the money? And now we're at Plough Lane, a lovely, shiny new stadium that we haven't still paid for it yet, let's be honest. But we've got a shiny new stadium, we're getting new fans in. And all of a sudden, we're thinking, no matter how much you think about it, Kings Meadow, you sort of accept a certain level. Does that make sense? Because of what your stadium looks like. But Plough Lane is a lovely stadium, and fans are now looking to push on. But actually, what you're seeing off the pitch and what you're seeing on the pitch isn't the same. And I think this season's proved what I thought all along. You know, we said we're going to go a new strategy. We're going to go for a process. We're going to look at going young. We're going to look at then be getting valuable assets, selling, doing what the old Wimbledon done. You know, Mark, I think Mark and I have been going a very similar time. You know, the old Wimbledon, been through the academies, set off, you know, get good 2-3 years out of them, sell them when they're right. Then you bring an X-Lock in. And we did that for years. Of course, yes, at a higher level. Doesn't mean it can't work. But the moment we've got into a situation where the possibility of relegation comes in, we've now got certain fans going, well, we can't get relegated. So the process, but you can't keep having a new process every season. You've got to at some point go, do you know what? We may have to accept relegation to understand that this process may work. What's the point in getting rid of a head coach? It was the first head coach we've got. We don't actually, in my opinion, I don't think we actually know how good Robbo can be, because he can only coach what comes through the door. And that's no disrespect to the players, but we haven't got the depth of squad in there. So I think money has to come in. I don't think we can get away from this much longer. I really don't. I think fans are going to want, simply just because of the situation we're in. You know, we're in a lovely new ground. And I think new fans coming along, I've always, the greatest story in football is a great marketing thing. But us three on here and know how hard it was to get to League One. It wasn't easy. It wasn't just going, well, we go in there. We have many, you know, we've gone back to days of Staines, and I remember Bromley away in the, I mean, and Wes Daly getting sent off after 20 minutes. You know, that's some really rough times. The greatest story of football did just happen, but I don't necessarily believe sometimes that maybe the newer fans want to do that journey of getting relegated or having some tough times. But yeah, look, I'm for looking at options. Doesn't want to sell up, but I also
just
bear a head in the sands.
Stuart, just picking up on a couple of points that you've made. I mean, first of all, the transfer policy this season and the transfer committee. Have to say, as a fan and somebody who knows a little bit about football players, I've got friends, a very good friend whose two sons are professional football players through Coventry City. Transfer policy this season and our selection of loan players has been nothing short of appalling. And I don't know what's gone wrong this year. I think the scouting has been pretty poor to have brought in the quality of players that we brought in and the little impact that they've had for us. I was warned about two of the players coming in about how they were with other clubs from an attitude perspective. And do you know what? I watched them running around the pitch and I watched them warming up. And I can tell as an ex-referee as well, their attitude stinks. They're only there to pick up a wage. They're not worried about playing for AFC Wimbledon.
Is this loans or permanent, sorry?
Loan signings that we brought in this season. I think they've been very, very poor. I think whoever made the decision to sell Ollie Palmer for 300 grand, but then not sign somebody using some of those funds that knew how to score goals needs to be questioned and needs to be held to account. Now, I don't know who's involved in that on the transfer committee, but I'm sorry, Cosgrove's come in. He's not looked up for it. Apart from maybe his first game, the first half hour, He looks short of confidence. It doesn't look as if he's going to be able to score a goal for us. I see it with Ablade, or the Blade, whatever you might like to call him. I can't see him scoring a goal for us. The one thing I will say about our younger players that maybe come through from the youth setup in Radoni, Asau and Hartigan, and also McCormick, since we signed him, is, do you know what, when they're on song, those guys are unstoppable.
Mm.
But do you know what? They play on confidence. And I've seen Asau at times, his shoulders are sloped, he looks fed up, he looks like he doesn't always want to be on the pitch. And I was lucky enough to have a word with him the other week and tried to say to him as a referee, do you know what? You got to pick your shoulders up. You've got to go out there. You've got to run out there with your heart on your sleeve for 95, 96 minutes. If a referee gives a decision against you, do you know what? take it on the chin, get on with it. He doesn't always do that. I mean, crikey, the amount of cautions he's picked up this season, I put my head in my hands when I see him getting cautioned as a referee, because you know what? I don't think there's a single one, apart from where he got sent off for allegedly spitting, that I, as a referee, would have said, you know, you don't deserve that, mate. He deserves every single one, probably deserves some more. And fans are starting to blame the referees week in, week out. Robbo's started to blame the referees as well. You can't blame the referees. They go out there, they do a job, they see it as they give it in a split second. Those players, the younger ones, if they want to make it and they want to have big money moves elsewhere for this club, they've got to start playing up and playing on their game all the time, irrespective of the score. I'm not seeing that with some of our younger players at the moment. And when Lee Brown had his interview after the Plymouth game, do you know what? That really resonated with me, what he was saying. And you can tell from what he said, there is some trouble in the dressing room with some of those players and their attitudes at the moment. They're letting Robbo down. They're letting the fans down. I don't blame Robbo with a lot of this, as you say. I actually think he's a really good coach. I think he's got some great ideas. I don't think he is the person to be sacked right here, right now, because we've gone on this ridiculous run of 18 games without winning. Do you know what? Yeah, we might sack him. Who are we going to bring in for the money? Are we going to get anyone better in? No, probably not. And do you know what? 12 months' time again, we'll be in a similar sort of position if we do manage to stay up. And it'd be a different manager, same situation. Let's go back, Stu, to when probably you and I were a little bit younger. One Harry Bassett hadn't been at the club that long, got the club relegated from Division 3 to Division 4. Fans wanted him out at that point. The club stuck by him. The next season, he started to turn the club around. He got his group of players in. He started to develop them. They went Division 4, Division 3, Division 2, Division 1. And OK, he left the club at that point. But what happened the year after we won the FA Cup? I don't think we'll do that again. And I don't think any football club would do that again. But stick with the current manager. Stick with Robbo as our head coach. Give him 2, 3, maybe 4 seasons to try and instill his way of doing things and his philosophy. I think he's built up some good contacts with other clubs, but I think that's going to take time to nurture and to bring through.
I mean, I want to just, your point on blaming referees, absolutely 100%. I don't think there's a football club in the country that's ever been relegated because of referees' decisions. But also the young players, and you talk about Asal and perhaps shoulders dropping, head dropping at times. That all comes back, doesn't it, to the consequence of the financial problems we've got. We've gone for a model where we're going to go with a squad largely based with younger players because of the expense. Someone as talented as Ayoub or Jack Redoni, fantastic players, but we're seeing the inconsistency that comes with younger players. And Stu, I mean, I don't go quite as far back as you do, but for me, the young players, even the players that were really successful when they came into the first team, Jason Newells, Carl Courts, these players, they weren't playing week in, week out, twice a week, three times a week, were they? And that is, unfortunately, the issue we've got, is it not, with these young players, is that we're having to put them out there every week, and that they just can't quite have that level of consistency at their age.
Normally, with the youngsters, you dip them in and dip them out. So you dip them in for 3 or 4 games, let them have a bit of a break. Back in the old days, you obviously had a reserve league, didn't you, and stuff like that, where you could do that. But it's interesting what Mark's saying in terms of the, I suppose it's the expectation and the young players. You know, we've got. So last season, Ayoub Asal had a half a season, didn't he? But didn't play in front of any crowds. Ethan Chislett, who I thought was really good last year, but being in front of a crowd, it's just a different ball game. You know, you're playing for points, but you're also playing for the expectation. And there is a big... I still sometimes feel for these kids, and they are kids in my eyes, that the pressure on them to not get relegated and being the first... You know, it was like the first women in the team to get into League One or stuff, or be part of that team. No one wants to be part of that team that gets relegated. It's going to happen at some point. The great story of football doesn't mean you don't get relegated or you don't flirt with relegation. But I sometimes look at the pressure that's on them and that can only weigh you down. It can only weigh you down, you know. And what it's why I'm frustrated with us with this, you know, get rid of the manager. And look, I've known Robbo for many, many years, but I'm also very, I call it as I see it. He has a lot of respect from that team. You know, they want to win for me. If you look in and thinking, you know, when you look at teams and go, they've lost it, the manager's lost it. You can tell those teams. You can tell them a mile off. But I don't see that in there. I think Robbo's doing all the things that he knows work, but nothing works overnight. And he doesn't have the squad. You know, look at Lincoln City on Saturday. They had a mad January window. Absolutely mad January window. We managed to escape the January window in a weaker position than we went into it, which is crazy. And Mark's right about Ollie Palmer. Even though I said to you, Nick, haven't I, that I agreed that we needed to start taking a transfer fee from these players and not let them go on free transfers. However, letting them go in the last week of the window and then being in a desperate position where every club knows you've got money and they're going to, you know, make it difficult. We should have with Wrexham gone, look, if you're interested in him, make it by middle of the window. Give him some sort of timeline, because in the end, they put us in the shit, to be truthful, because they took out a striker. And then we couldn't get a replacement in. And it's obvious that we had loads of other targets because of the lateness that Cosgrove come in. That's quite obvious with them. But yeah, I just, this pressure on these kids is immense. And Robert's trying to take it off them. I think as fans, we, you know, in my opinion, get the 9 games out of the way. We're not in the relegation zone yet. I don't think we still are yet either as we talk live.
Not as we speak, but Stu, that could that might not age well.
I know, but what I mean is, though, we've gone 18 league games without a win and we've still not dipped under, which is amazing, but we're still not in a relegation thing. So let Robbo sit a season out, 9 games, let's get behind him, let's get behind the players, and then let's thrash out in the summer. If it doesn't work, and, you know, it hasn't worked until we get relegated, we've got something to deal with. Even if we survive, we've still got to do a massive review. We don't just go, we've got away with it. So I think there's a lot of things we need to do, but I'm frustrated with sometimes of how we are as fans. I think, look, just get behind it.
A lot of our football fans, and we see it on the social media groups, a lot of them spend far too much time playing Football Manager. And they suddenly get AFC Wimbledon up into the Premiership, winning the Champions League, and they think it's that easy. Do you know what? Being involved in football, it is not an easy job. Whether you're a manager, whether you're a CEO, whether you're a coach, whether you're a physio, it's blooming hard. I mean, having been around a decent standard of football for a number of years, I suppose the one thing that maybe frustrates me a little bit with Robbo and our current team is we don't seem to have an ability to be able to suddenly change our formation, where you see a number of other clubs do that, whether it be via substitution or changes in personnel in the starting lineup. Why do we always seem to start the game, or vast majority of our games, with the same formation? It's that formation isn't working for us at the moment. If he chooses to stick with it in a game and you suddenly try and change it, the players need to be able to adapt, and they never seem to be able to adapt when we maybe start playing two up front. I always remember under Neil Ardley's reign, we were playing New York City in the FA Cup. I think it was a replay down in King's Meadow.
Oh, yeah.
And Neil Ardley in the second half suddenly changed it and played three up front. And we absolutely battered them in the second half, and we went on and won that game. And it just amazed me how we were suddenly able to turn things around. That's the sort of thing that we need Robbo to do with his players on a more frequent basis. Now, they need to work on that more in the training grounds, and I'm sure Robbo would say, well, we do try other tactics, and they should work. But the players, when they're out on that pitch and they suddenly do it in front of a crowd, they need to be able to step it up with a change in tactics.
Where does the process, to use that word, fit into that, though? Is setting up the way we do set up, normally 4-2-3-1, with the attacking players we've got, is that part of the process? Is that getting you trying to perfect a particular system? And I know that might sound crazy because people can say, we've lost 18. Well, we have not won in 18 games, so how could you possibly perfect the process? But is that not part of what he's trying to do? Or is that maybe something that Robert would have done? And Stu, you'll know this because you went down a few times to the academy teams.
Yeah, but surely all good football teams win games and do well because they're able to adapt both at the start of a match and during a match. And we can't seem to adapt and to change things around. And appreciate there is a process, but you need to be able to, at times, to change that process. You need to have process A, you need to have process B, process C, because things happen in a football match. And you have to react to that and you have to suddenly change it. And whilst at the start of a game, process A could work very, very well for you, if something suddenly happens in that game, and take Saturday's game, for example, Lincoln getting a player sent off, we should have rammed home that advantage. We didn't. We should have been able to change from process A to maybe process C. I mean, the other thing I saw about the Lincoln game as well, Lincoln have lost their first choice goalkeeper coming up. Was it game before ours?
Yeah.
And their new goalkeeper had struggled in the previous match with high balls coming in, cross and big target men. If a lay person like me can be seeing that, then come on, guys, we need to be going to process B or process D to be able to target the weaker goalkeeper and to give him a hard time.
Yeah, it's interesting that from what I know, I've chatted to Will about this many times, and I've been there to training ground a few times. I think we subtly change formation during games. I don't know whether you, but you know, we can play a 4-2-3-1, a 4-2-2-2, play a 4-3-3. I don't think, in my opinion, I don't think the formations have been the problem of changing. I think the biggest problem is fitting the personnel with the formation. So what I mean by that, how many times have we had a chance to play in the early part of the season, Presley and Ollie Palmer together? Two big lumps, occupy two centre-halves and then try and get your side of it. I think Robbo's caught between a rock and a hard place, because if you do just chuck the ball into the box, with the players we've got, it just comes back. So I think in my way I've looked at it sometimes, I just didn't think we haven't had the depth of squad to be able to effectively change a plan. And I think what Robbo's done is kept with what he's doing. And obviously he has all his metrics that he measures. And if you look at the games, there's been some games that we've done the right things. You know, we look at the Doncaster, we led at home to Shrewsbury, we led at home to Cheltenham. We've done the right things. We just haven't got the know-how or that game management just to kill games. Because Lincoln...
But surely that comes down to signing some versatile players and comes back to the transfer policy. And
I agree. I
look at one of my friend's sons. He's on loan at a Scottish Premiership team at the moment. And he's a Scotland under-21 international. And the reason why he gets game time and he starts regularly for Scotland under-21s and starts regularly for his Scottish Premiership team is he's versatile. And he's versatile at 20, 21 years of age. He can play right back. He can play right wing back. He can play right midfield. He can play right wing. He can play central midfield. He can play defensive midfield. That's kind of players. If you're going to bring players in, you want to have versatility that you can play them in various different positions. I look at our players, and as you say, you got a Sal, you got Radoni, you got McCormack, that they play behind the front man. It's very difficult, apart from maybe other than McCormack, who you can play him alongside deeper in midfield with Woodyard. You can't very easily play them anywhere else. I'm still trying to work out where Mabudi's best position is on the
football field.
Wait for it.
Thomas, what's his position? I mean, he can't even get on the blimmin' bench at the moment. Why have we brought him in? They don't seem to have any versatility within the players that they've brought in, and that's what you need.
And that's why I agree totally. And I think that's when you can. And this is why I'm saying you need to look behind. I think with your point about Football Manager is quite interesting actually, because I always say that the new, and I mean this with the utmost respect, but the new type of fan is a very instant success type of fan. So it's not working. or get rid of this person. You know, if you look at the Premiership clubs, Watford sack them every month, it feels like, doesn't it? Do you know what I mean? But
Chelsea don't win the title, then the sack them. And God help us if we end up getting a load of Chelsea fans come to watch us because their club fall apart. They're going to demand our manager gets sacked every other game.
But it is that expectation. You know, it doesn't...
It's ridiculous. I mean, Alex Ferguson, great example as well. Go back to the 80s. Mm-hmm. He was that close to getting sacked. But they took a ballsy decision. They kept with him. Look at the rewards. Not being funny, similar thing happened with Wenger at Arsenal as well. And football clubs and football fans are... frustrates the hell out of me, are far too hasty at getting rid of coaches or managers when things don't go wrong. It's an easy way out.
But the thing is, Mark, I said to Nick before, we can't keep doing that because if we say, for example, say, OK, Robbo goes, do we bring another head coach or do we go, actually, we don't know if that worked, let's go back to a manager. Well, we've not actually proved anywhere the head coach doesn't work because we can all see things in that process of recruitment. Is there enough funds going into the first team? You know, what actually Robbo needs, does he get? Because we actually don't know. We really don't know, do we? Robbo may go in and go, I want these players. And they come back, can't get him, but got him. It's, and sometimes you're a case, in all due respect to the loans we've got, you know, Robbo went a lot in the summer to a lot of clubs to sell. And we haven't done that before. We've never done those links. We in London, how many Premier League clubs do we have? And we've never gone near Chelsea.
Agreed. And I think it's going to take him two or three iterations getting to know these clubs and them getting to know him more to be able to get the better quality players through. I don't think it's quite paid off this time around. And as you say, do you know what? If we get rid of Robbo now, with the money that we can offer a manager and the playing budget that goes with it, you tell me, who are we going to get in that's going to be better than Robbo? I guarantee you, we won't be getting in anyone any better. What we'll get is we'll get somebody in that might be gave us a bounce. We'll sign a few players at the start of the next season, getting a few loans. And do you know what? We'll be back in the same position in 12 months' time and everyone will be calling for that individual to go as well. And if anybody else suggests getting Steve Bloody Evans into this club, I'm sorry. He is the most corrupt guy I've ever come across. And as a match official, I used to relish having to deal with him because you could stitch him up like a kipper because he has not got a clue. He should not be involved with our football club. And I would wash my hands if we brought him in. Seriously.
There's little chance.
How are Boston United getting on these days? Where are they? I don't know. But, I mean, I will say, Mark, the Robbo sort of in-out question, is that basically why Stu and I got in trouble on Saturday post-match on the 9 Years TV because we came out and backed Robbo? What are we saying here about fans wanting that immediate response? Is that what they're expecting us to say?
I think some are expecting you to say it. I think probably it's the way that it was pitched. And look, I've got no allegiance to you guys and I've got no allegiance to any of the other groups and what have you. But there's probably a bit of a view that 9 Year podcast guys do stuff for the club and are a bit of a voice of the club. I personally don't think that. But sometimes it is probably about addressing the elephant in the room. And I just felt that was maybe one of the first questions that needed to come out of Saturday because you knew from seeing stuff on social media throughout the game. I said, unfortunately, I wasn't at the game Saturday because I had COVID. So I was watching it through social media and Gillette Soccer Special and updates from mates at the game. People were getting very, very wound up. And that's the first thing that were on their mind. So I would have been addressing that issue straight away and giving a balanced view. And do you know what? Yeah, some people are going to argue, get rid of him. Some people are going to say, keep him. I'm personally in the keep camp at the moment. And even if that means we get relegated, I don't want us relegated. Far from it, do I want us relegated. But if we do get relegated and we do keep Robbo, I actually think we've got a greater chance of bouncing back maybe not necessarily straight away in one season, but certainly within two seasons, because as much as we knock the word the process, I actually think there's a bit of method behind his madness there, and things will come to fruition. He's going to learn, we're going to learn, but I think he will help to develop the club.
It's a fair point. I was going to, you know, in terms of, I was pitch side on the 90s TV. Otherwise, I ducked out and let guys go in. But I was very conscious. And I think you're right, Mark. You know, I think one of the things, and, you know, Nick and I said it, when we do live TV, it's really important that you understand what the fan base is thinking outside. So you can feel from the, you know, you can feel from the atmosphere, you can tell with the frustrations and stuff like that. And I look at social media, and one of the things I said to the guys before we went live on Saturday evening was, we've got to judge the room here. You know, we may have our own, and I would back Robert. I'll be honest with you. My main thing was, is that if Robbo looks like he's getting beaten up and he's just not enjoying it, then from a personal point of view, I'm looking at him from his own health, his mental health inside of it. Ability-wise, I've got no doubt in it. I've got no doubt. I really haven't, you know. But I was also one of the people, when he got the job, that I didn't actually want him to get the job, because there's only one way you leave that job, unfortunately, in a way, isn't there? And it isn't normally as a messiah. It's normally you've been sacked on there. But I think, you know, it's difficult. We don't, I can say hand on heart here, we get no guidance from the club of what we can't discuss. One of the first shows we had, Ollie Palmer had just been sold. And I was like, we're going to discuss it. And I've got nothing going to where you can't say this, you can't say that. We never put a script through. We don't really have a script, to be honest with you, because it gets torn up.
They've definitely not got a script with me tonight. I know that much.
You just go with it. You just go with it. You know, but we've never been said you can't say anything. And what I would argue with is that I don't know many things on a club channel would have actually addressed some of the things we addressed on the show. Because I don't think they would address the sacking issue. I was actually encouraging Spike, who was the director, I was encouraging him to put quite a lot of those challenging questions on. There were some that were just offensive, and I'm not interested in that. If you want to say, I want a manager sacked, it's fine. We'll put it on screen. But there has to be something to discuss with it. But I think, you know, Nick and I didn't want Glyn to go. We backed Neil Ardley. But I think we're both very similar in terms of, we like the longevity of it and not a knee jerk. And I got the same abuse when Neil Ardley didn't get sacked.
Well, do you know, the irony of the Neil Ardley one was, we were accused of not supporting him. So after he was sacked, we got told, well, maybe if you'd have been more supportive and not so critical of him, we can't win, Stu, because, you know, yeah, we're nothing but supportive of Neil.
Neil Ardley one was interesting. I think Neil had served his time and he had gone stale, and yep, he wasn't going to be able to take us forward. It's a bit like Terry Brown. I mean, I used to talk to Terry quite a bit when I officiated Wimbledon, and you could see taking the club as far as he personally could. I think Robbo can take us further. And look, I mean, to be clear to anyone listening, one thing, this isn't for me. This isn't a Robbo loving session, talking about him tonight. He has his faults. And I think even he will admit he's got his faults. But he needs to try harder. But I still think he's the right man to take us forward, and to be the head coach at AFC Wimbledon.
I mean, we talk about faults. Can I just say, yep, 100%. Finishers. Where do you stand on finishers, Mark?
Subs, you mean?
Substitutes, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, dearie me. I mean, I would question a little bit, and I know a few fans have, what are we doing taking off attacking fielders for, attacking players for defensive players at the moment when we're trying to score goals, unless you're going to go and stick a big lump like Hennigan up front and start whipping crosses in for him to try and head them in. I reflected back, and I was talking to a couple of the friends that I sit with at football about this, about where did things start to go wrong? And I mean, some people blame over the postponement of the COVID games against Ipswich and Portsmouth and Charlton,
yeah,
etc. But I also, think for me it started to go wrong when the coach that we had on loan from Chelsea went back.
Right.
And that coaching unit and coaching team that we'd had up until that point, I actually think had been doing quite a good job. We always seem to get our substitution stroke finishers right at the same at the same time. Used to be able to finish out matches, etc. We were still playing exciting attacking football. We could turn it up a gear or two. And then he went, and oh God, it's all started coming off the rails again, hasn't it? And yeah, if I was running my Football Manager AFC Wimbledon team, would I be doing the substitutions that Robbo's doing at the moment? No, I wouldn't. But he can only work with the tools that he's got at the end of the day. And it just comes back to this point that he's been dealt a bit of a duff hand because of the transfer committee and the transfer policy. And I think many of those individuals involved, if they look back when they turn around and said, we're only going to recruit players, was it under the age of 23? They look back at that and wish they hadn't made that decision. So I think that potentially could be one of the things that cost us. And bringing in just Lee Brown is probably too little too late.
To be fair, I think Robbo did admit that as well, though, that he might have got his mixture between, you know, youth and experience. The ratio might be wrong. I don't think there's a might about it. I think it's definitely
wrong.
You know, but I think the coaching setup is a very interesting one because I tend to agree with you. And I think the youth. If you look at Rob Tovey and James behind it, they've been in the academy for years. They're not new. They're not side of it. But I think one thing we might have got wrong was maybe bringing them all together in a one. Because it sort of like goes with, oh, you've done, you brought your youth people with you. If they'd been brought in with another, and they were obviously with James Simmons, but if when he went, someone else come in that maybe wasn't part of the academy and looked as apart from it, then I think that might have been better. But the thing that can always be chucked back at Robbo is you just don't have, you know, you kept with the people you know, and that obviously hasn't worked. What I would say, do you know what's interesting? And I'm not going to blame COVID completely. I don't think it helped whatsoever. You can't blame that on an 18-game unbeaten run. Oh, sorry, 18-game beaten. Sorry, let's start again. 18
winless.
Games, we know we are. But the irony was is that we beat Accrington away and we drew at Wickham, arguably could have won that game. And one of the things that Robbo always used to say was we can't keep trying to fight people at their own game. So you can't try and beat Accrington at a long ball game or a physical game because they're going to beat you at that. Accrington, we didn't fight them. Accrington, we played around them. And if you look back at that game, we destroyed Accrington, not by trying to be what they were. We beat them with a quick counter-attack and press. Wickham, we did the same thing. And then we got that break. So it's so frustrating. If you look at where COVID stopped and went back into Oxford, which, let's be fair, the Oxford game was just an absolute...
Oh, God, it was woeful.
I've never seen anything like it. But it then set a tone because if you think about the change of formation that you were saying before, we did that at Boreham Wood, went to a 3-5-2, and got caught through in the middle because Ernesto Guinness Walker was too far over. Do you know what I mean? It's a nightmare to look back at. But I agree with you. I think, you know, we need to look at our coaching setup. There's a lot of things we need to reflect on that we have got wrong. But it's we, and I don't believe you leave it at the head coach door.
Totally agree. And do you know what? Sometimes it's for some of the other coaches in the coaching setup to turn around and actually say something to the head coach and say, do you know what, boss, this ain't right. We need to change it. And they've got to have some of those characters that are big enough and bold enough to be able to say that. I'd expect it in my workplace. If one of my team saw that I wasn't doing something right, I'd rather they call me out on it. And that we can then do something about it. And do they have the experience and do they have the knowledge to be able to do that at this level? I'm not totally sure. I'm probably the only one, maybe, would be Bezo, because Bezo's been around for such a number of years. And this is where I thought the idea of bringing somebody in from a club like Chelsea into the coaching setup was quite a neat concept. And unique, and maybe we should have looked to repeat it. Or if Robbo stays with us, next season, maybe he needs to look at shuffling up his coaching team and bringing in somebody that's got some experience at another club that can maybe see things differently and can challenge him.
I was saying Nick McArthur at Luton.
Luton. Yeah, there you go. Second Luton mention of the show. Happy days. You know it's a good show. You know it's a good show when Luton get mentioned.
And he's got an AFC Wimbledon goalkeeper in the starting 11 for them as well, isn't he?
He does indeed.
You know, I saw that. How mad is that, like, with James Shea? Remember, do you remember the grief he was getting about his confidence? And he's now a championship goalkeeper, and not just by token either.
Well, do you know, he's so well regarded up at Luton. They love him up there. But he does lend himself well to fans wherever he goes. Just one last thing about talking about having a culture where you want to, you know, call out when it's not good enough, call out when it's made a mistake and things like that. Did Lee Brown's post-match interview after Plymouth, that didn't just come to him at that moment, did it? That must have been building for a good number of games, wouldn't it? Is there an argument that we perhaps needed that conversation a little bit earlier?
And fair play to the club for allowing it to go out. But first of all, I wish they'd do stuff like that more frequently, interviews like that far more frequently, because you know what, you sometimes listen to the players and what they're saying and you're pretty much reading off a script. He spoke from the heart, and it did remind me of Wimbledon of old, and I wish a few more players would be a little bit like him. If you had 11 of him out on the pitch, we wouldn't be in this position. Although, interestingly, he was calling out some of the players, but he's also been at fault for a couple of our goals recently, and you kind of go, you're switching off as well. So just have a look in the mirror yourself as well.
Yeah, do you know what? I think it's interesting. I think you're right. I think the thing was, I think he tried to be as a collective, saying we're getting relegated, and he couldn't have said that any more times. But you sense in a way that I don't think it was about performances. I think it was more about the attitude, the, you know, because there's no coincidence. You know, Doncaster leading a game, they score, we crumble. Plymouth 20 minutes in, you know, we're doing okay against. We're not battering them. And I'm guessing someone scored, by the way, Mark.
Yeah, sorry, Gillingham have just conceded against Charlton.
Do you know what? I wasn't going to say this right, but Gillingham, if you look at points per game in the last eight, they are 1.38 points per game in the last eight. Every other club around them is zero, is my, you know, 0.5.
Less than one. Point, yeah.
So that's good. But I think what Lee Brown, I think it wasn't necessarily, because I think you're right, he has been at fault for some stuff, but I think recently he's got a lot better. But I think he was basically saying, look, do you know what? We can lose, but we can't lose with an attitude of just giving in. And unfortunately, that's what it looked like. I'd be amazed if he hasn't said that in the dressing room already. I'd be amazed if he... But I think personally, he needed to go and say that. And do you know what? From what I do know he'd done the interview. He was a replacement for someone else to do the interview. And he didn't call to do the interview. He didn't go, I want to do an interview. It was more of a case of, I won't say the person that was replaced, but the person that was going to do the interview was replaced with Lee Brown, and he come out of it, and they weren't expecting him to come out with it. So, you know, it's one of those interesting ones. And I think you're right. I was really impressed that they did let it go. I don't want too many of those, Mark, though, because that means we're not doing very good. So,
No, but I'll tell you what. I'd love to see an interview like that with the passion that came out after we actually win a game as well.
Definitely. Definitely. I like him a lot. I like him a lot.
Old school footballer.
Yeah, always liked him at Pompey. Always thought he was decent. So glad we got him. And the most hilarious thing is, by the way, I was there late on Tuesday. I was late on Saturday. We did an interview with him. Well, Darius done an interview for us, and he's got a driver. He has got a driver. He had his car. He had a car waiting outside, and he just got in. I'm like, wow. Even Liam Trotter had that, Nick. He never had that.
Liam Trotter couldn't go to the effort to advertise for one. So lazy.
He must be the first player we've got who's got his own driver.
Yeah, that's a little bit too flash. I'm not sure about that. But I can't say anything too bad about Lee Brown, because he's still on my case, apparently, for some of my question writing abilities. But we'll save that for another day, because we probably need to shoot. Just before we go, Mark, thank you very much for speaking with us this week. just to change it up a little bit, who this season, apart from Lee Brown, who this season on the pitch has impressed you most? Who do you think's had a good season?
I think Wood Giles had a good season when he's been fit, and we missed him when he was injured. And the other one that's impressed me this season when they have played has been Marsh. Although I always think, and I remember him at the Scunthorpe pre-season game, I reckon he could very easily get himself sent off and start a fight with himself. and the other one, simply because they had to play out of position, and I think for a vast majority of the time they've done it very well, is Pawosu. But again, he's still a young player and probably gets given too many games to play. And as a result, fans then get on his back when he doesn't deliver. But playing at, on the right-hand side of the back line, I think he's done a bloody good job.
And just to finish off as well, sorry, I was meant to mention Lee Brown again, just to come back to him. Top shithousery on Saturday to get their player sent off. That red card has been rescinded on appeal.
But doesn't surprise me.
No, but that was... do you know what, Stuart? It was reminiscent of the classic John Mark, because Marquis was playing against us, obviously, on Saturday. The red card for Lincoln on Saturday reminded me of Ramsdale getting Marquis sent off for Doncaster a few years ago.
Yeah.
Just doing enough to wind them up and get something that, so we need a little bit more of that. As we keep saying, experience, a little bit of nous to get us those little edges. Not that it came to anything in the end, unfortunately. Do you reckon if, do you reckon if Sam Cosgrove was fit on Saturday, his height right on top of the goalkeeper might have made a little bit of a difference?
I don't think he would have got close enough to the goalkeeper. I don't think he's got confidence to at the moment. I just can't see him scoring a goal for us.
Fair enough. Cool. Right, so this Saturday we are away at Cheltenham. Stu, are we going to get a win there?
No, I don't see it. I think Atete and Alfie May have been got player of the month. I think they're a decent team. I'll take a draw now. I know we want to win, but I think it's important we don't lose. Lost our last three, so we need to stop that rut rather than worrying about that side of it. But no, get a draw at Cheltenham and then come back for Cambridge, which hopefully they're starting to flounder a little bit after their tanking at Sheffield Wednesday on the weekend.
100%. Mark, confident?
No, I'm never confident at the moment. I'd love to say, yes, we will nick a win, but I'm still trying to work out where we're going to score a goal from at the moment. So I would happily take a draw, especially as this appears to be four teams that are a lot worse than us at the moment. But yeah, anything other than the defeat, I'll take at the moment.
Cool. Right. Once again, then, Mark, thank you very much for joining us this week. Definitely, Stu, I think something we want to do more of, isn't it? Sort of more roundtable type affairs with the podcast. Yeah. So we'll be doing more of these, I'm sure, going forward. But for now, I'll say, Mark, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Stu, thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you, everybody, for listening. I'm sure we've also a few Milton Keynes fans listening as well after this week on Twitter. Exactly.
And Morecambe have just conceded as well.
Gets better and better.
Well, what a... Well, we'll end it on a high and hope that carries on into the second half this evening. But thank you, everyone, for listening. Alexa Bliss, bag first, milk glass, 2 + 2 = 4. And we shall speak to you again next week.